Welcome to another episode of Threads of Enlightenment, and you guys know the custom that I have here is first to welcome our guests, because I know they're coming with a couple of things very, very expensive in my mind. Time, 4 hours, every one of us have it. Now, what you do with time will speak a lot about you. You have to learn to respect, honor her, and give her her due. Once you understand the value and what time means to you, trust me, things will change in your life. The other is the journey. Journey is designed with power. Why? Because it created the individual that is before us. That journey housed wisdom, it housed failure. If for lack of a better word, I hate that word. I don't like that word, failure. I'll go with it for now because it's what they give us in the language to say. But all of that encompasses powers. All those things are in that journey. And it has creative power to create that individual that is before us. And that individual is Scott Allen. Scott, thank you so much for coming to Threads of Enlightenment.
Well, Ken, it's great to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's an honor, man. As I mentioned to you before, I always tell people that question, how do you serve mankind? Because I try to encourage my listeners to come over here, get here as quickly as you can, because there are some things waiting for you that you can only experience when you get here. So hurry up and become a servant. So Scott, how do you serve mankind?
So I think that one of the ways that I do this is through making myself better. And it's something that I'm very obsessed about. It's not about me, but I know that if I can make myself the greatest version of myself, I can take that and I can teach other people something about themselves that they didn't know. So that's really part of my journey, is growing and just making that a consistent thing that's in my daily routines. I serve mankind by learning as much as I can about not just who I am on the surface, but who I am at a much deeper level. Because as I go deeper and I learn these things, I start to, you know, it's like this light bulb that starts going on in my head. And then I have a lot of them. And it just becomes like over the last 20 or 30 years, it's really become an obsession. It didn't start out that way. In the beginning, it was more of desperation to get out of a place of pain. We may circle back to that conversation in a bit, but I just feel very empowered that, you know, that it is my duty and also my privilege to be able to take everything that I've learned and continue to learn and teach this to other people. You know, for me, like to serve mankind, to serve people, to, you know, in order for me to do this, I have to show up every day and just continue with the belief that every day is, you know, it's sure, it's a new day, but every day is a chance. Like every morning I wake up, I just think, wow, you know, I've got another opportunity. It's like one more day, you know, and I just have this attitude going into every morning, every day is like one more day, one more day. So I just feel very grateful. I have a lot of gratitude. When I have that feeling of like, you know, if I just had this, if today was like the last day where I could serve mankind, you know, what would I do? And I always wake up in the morning with, I didn't actually phrase it that way, but it's, you know, it's like, if this is my last day on earth, what am I going to do with it? Right. So I try to be very aware of time as well, knowing that it passes by very quickly, as we all know. And, you know, I just try to engage with time as much as I can. Sure, taking time to relax. But when I put in the work, I put in the deep work. And again, my mission is to make myself better so that I can teach other people how to reinvent themselves. Because I feel like I need to experience it myself before I can carry it over to other people and show them how to do it.
So, I think the ones that experience it in themselves are the true teachers, the sages. I always laugh about those weekend things that they have to become coaches and you know, master class, they call it. And you have a master class in 3 hours and they let you loose and you think you're a teacher and you have no experience. And that's just someone that doesn't know how to use a gun. You can liken that, and they will be shooting all kinds of people and hurting people all over the place because they're not trained. They haven't gone through anything. And so when they haven't gone through anything, they have nothing. So it's not one of our custom is to go back in that time machine that is called a memory and revisit some of the spaces that we hang out for a few years. The first space is called family. Then we move through, we head into the educational systems, all these systems. Then we go into professional route. And one of the very first space we hang out for a few days with mom and dad and the family. What was your family like?
Yeah, you know, I came from a really good family. My mother and father were both had jobs. They were hard workers. And, you know, I think we did family things. We went camping on the weekends. We went to movies. And for the most part, I mean, yeah, I think I had a great childhood. Now, it wasn't perfect, like most people. But, we had Christmases and everything like that. So the one thing I think I remember mostly is, you know, my father was, he's not alive anymore, but he was a great man. And he really took care of his family and he provided. And, we would have those weekends away on, take family trips away and we really enjoyed each other's company. And then eventually, time went by and kids got older and, pretty soon I think we had stopped doing those things. And there was a point in my family where I think we had stopped talking about, I think a lot of some of the later issues that I had were just based on, there was a lot of shame in my family that wasn't discussed. My father and I had discussed it years ago, just before he passed away. And it was a very powerful moment where, we both recognized that the shame was there. But growing up, it was something that it was like that this underlying dark cloud where we didn't talk about things. We knew that there were problems. Like a lot of families, we just, danced around it, avoided it. And then as you get older and you maybe get out of the house, you start to, you don't leave it behind, though. You carry it with you. That led into some other problems down the road.
It's something that eventually that needs to be addressed within the self because we picked it up. And whatever we pick up in the family unit, and they call those the traumas of the family, whatever we pick up and we were exposed to, there is that time where we have to sit down and have a conversation with that trauma. And those memories, if you will, that was a part of the family there back in the day as we're moving through, because we carry it with us. So here you are, and you're moving through the family, of course, just like all of us. We have little issues. I remember my culture was kids, you don't speak at all about anything, especially those adults whenever they talk. You can't even be around there. But as you were growing up, Scott, you're heading in to your, teenage years, as they say. You're expanding your friendship, your dealing with different personalities and people. How was Scott relating to others? Again, that those traumas that we have, those little secrets that we pick up, they manifest sometimes in outward behaviors and all those different things. How was Scott relating to others, man? How was he dealing with the friends outside of family?
Yeah, I'll start with school, because when I think back to a lot of the trauma and just how I felt about myself, I remember that, and I was writing about this the other day in my journal, where I had a lot of trouble in school, not so much like with not legal trouble or not trouble, I wasn't kicked out of school or anything like that. But just the work, like I really struggled with math and probably most of the other subjects. A big part of that was confidence, but that actually was from something bigger than that. It was really, I didn't think that I was worth anything. I just had this really low self-esteem. So that bled over into my schoolwork. And, it was interesting because math, I think I went through high school mathematics 3 times. Couldn't pass it. And what's interesting is later on, I went on to become an engineer. And for that, you need me. Yeah. But in school, I just had this belief that I couldn't do it. And to reinforce it, every time I got a test back, it was like, 10 points, 20 points. I mean, sometimes it was like zero because I didn't do anything. And to reinforce that, you know, I was picked on by even the teacher, and the you know, students would make fun of it because everybody knew everybody's score, right? So there were other, you know, like 6 or 7 other classes as well, but that was the one class that really impacted me. I'll say in a negative way, but I mean, when I look back now, I realize like, well, and you know, actually, if I had put in more effort, and if my attitude had been different, and there's a lot of ifs, you know, if these things, if circumstances, I probably could have passed it, not easily, but I could have done really well, right? So I realized, like, looking back, I had some internal beliefs that were just, they were just very fixed. Like, I can't do that. I would go to class every day thinking, I can't do this, I can't do this. And thing is, you know, like, again, you don't leave those things behind in school. You do carry those beliefs into other areas of your life, you know, later on.
Scott, how old did you think it became fixed? As you said, in your belief system, it resides there. How old were you in that thing when you took ownership of that?
That's an interesting question, because when I think back to it, actually, it started around elementary school, which would have been maybe, I think, 8, 9, 10 years old, probably at a really young age now that I think about it, because even then I struggled with calculations and math and sciences in general for whatever reason. But yeah, so I think from there it became a fixed belief, and it just led over into like junior high, and when I got to high school, it was like I was just barely getting done. And but the result of that as well, because I felt like I was such a loser and that I was never going to make it, I started acting out of class, getting kicked out of class, getting detentions back when they gave detentions, and all those things, you know. But I wasn't like a I wasn't a bad person. I wasn't even a bad student, really. It's just that I had a bad behavior and my attitude, because it was my way of getting back at the system. You know, I was just like,
Here you are. And one of the reasons why I go back, Scott, is that we get a chance to take a glimpse of some of the things, the details, a little more of some of the nuances that happened to us as young people. And how that thread walks with us all through our life until that day, as I talked to you, that day of visitation, we're given the opportunity to begin this conversation with the self as to how did I really pick it up? And then we begin to unmask that thing that is there. Once we get a clearer glimpse of what's going on, the minute you get a glimpse of what goes on, what's how and everything, free. But that is a tough journey right there to become free, because it is when it's in your belief, and something is in your belief, it is you until you begin to reprogram that belief. So here's this young man with that type of ownership of things, and he's looking into the world as far as going into his space now, beginning his journey that begins for most of us with college and stuff like that. What was the field that you picked, and why did you pick it?
Oh, interesting. Okay, so I picked electrical engineering, and before I went into that, I didn't go to college until I was about, I think I was 20. I took 2 years off because, just going back a little bit, I actually did not graduate from high school, although technically I did. I didn't have to go back and repeat any grades, but I didn't graduate with enough credits. However, fortunately, I was blessed with a lot of motivation and just like determination not to, well, although I believed I was a failure, I was determined not to fail. So after I left college, I enrolled in a bunch of courses. We didn't have internet back then. So these were like correspondence courses. And I just took a whole bunch of them. I took physics and math. And I'm at home studying all these courses by myself and just sending off the assignments every week to these teachers who would correct them and send them back. And ended up ranking up like 21 credits, which was more than enough to get into college. It took me about 2 years to do it. And I worked during that time as well. So I was able to actually support myself. But I went into that field because, well, first of all, I had to take something and I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, but that looked the most interesting to me. So I actually enjoyed things like programming and thinking problems and things like that. And also by taking these correspondence courses where I had to do the math, I realized once I failed a few assignments, but then I started actually, and here was the switch. I started getting better at it the more I actually studied it.
Yeah.
I started getting better scores. And then one day, like, I started getting really high scores. And this happened in college as well, where we were thrown into like doing, you know, physics and math and stuff like that and formulas, right? Yeah. And I was actually really good at it. And I suddenly realized, like, it clicked to me, like, wow, so you mean I was actually pretty good at it this whole time. I just, you know, I was convinced that I couldn't do it. And now here I was. You know, my marks were probably at the top of the class at the time, which I never imagined would have happened. So, but I got into that field again just because, you know, it looked really interesting. And it just had things that, something just pulled me into it. Like, I don't know if I can explain it, but something just said, that's the course you've got to take. And that's the course I applied for. And just one little side story is, like, to get into this school, we actually had to have like a one-on-one interview with the principal for like an hour, the dean of the school. And it was a rather intense interview. And they interviewed like 200 people and they only accepted a certain percentage, like 15 people, I think it was. And I just thought, there's no way they're going to let me in. I mean, they just have to look back at my track record of high school and, you know, it's like, but I'm going to do it anyway. Because I'm just like, there was nothing to lose. I ended up taking the interview, of course, got into the school. I don't know. It was just maybe something, you know, something was just, I've always believed, and this belief will probably come a little further into our discussion, but there's just always been something in my space, next to me, above me, wherever it is. It's like a life force that's just been kind of like my lucky charm. I'll call it that. There's a better word.
Yeah.
It's like a lucky charm that has been with me forever, like from the beginning. And that's just one example of things that have happened where it's like, I have no chance of getting this thing. And I got it.
That's awesome, man. I hope you guys heard what Scott said. You know, he was failing. He said he didn't want to be a failure. And he kept pushing through. And it's a hallmark of personal development. It's probably one of the foundations of it, is that one must keep pushing through to get to your destination. And that destination is usually something that you have set up. And so that's one of the hallmarks, is that you have to learn how to be honorable to yourself. And he said it. He said, I might be failing, but I am not a failure. I'm going to keep at it. And he, from what he said, you see where it took him out. He pushed through. And many of you guys are stuck. You're about to give up. Don't do it. Don't do it. Take a break. Talk to yourself. Trust me, you're going to have to learn how to talk to yourself and encourage yourself. Tell them, all right, you're doing okay. Let's get up one step and just keep moving. It is the hallmark for you to get to your other side, because it is designed that way. Every walk, I tell people, is designed with test in it to see if you're serious about what you want. And Scott was serious about what he wanted. And he didn't even think he was going to be able to go into school. He says, I'm not afraid. I'm going to go anyway. That conversation, you have to push through. And when you push through, as he said, someone is there with you. Is there with you. And they'll work things out for you behind the scenes that you will not know. All you have to do, I know the terminology people use it, you just have to show up. In some cases, that's all you need to do. I came from a Christian background. They say there's angels back there, that, you know, a realm of the unseen that is there working with you. But it's attractive to people who push through and get beyond their comfort, if you will. Scott, you're there. You got in. Explain that feeling, if you will, when they said, yeah, we want you as a part of this program. Here's this young man that has traveled through time and all of the disappointments, if you will, that he had to endure on his way walking in. How did it feel?
Great question. So it felt like I won the lottery. And I won the lottery many times in my life. Not the money. I'm just talking about the Audrey, which I think I was in there. Suddenly I had new friends. I had a new lifestyle. I mentioned that while I was working on these courses and trying to, you know, get my high school so I could get into college to begin. I was working in construction. And I remember like a year before that, I remember, so I'm from Nova Scotia. I'm from Halifax, Nova Scotia, and it gets very cold there in the winter. I was working in construction and, you know, pushing a wheelbarrow through, like in January, it's like minus 25, you know, so.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking back on that going, wow, like, you know, I could have been doing that for another 10 years. So here I was suddenly, you know, warm classroom, learning these new things, applying my knowledge and actually really just enjoying being a student, because for those 2 years that I was not going to school, I was just working, I was meeting other friends from my high school who are going to college and talking about the parties they're going to and you know, all these other things that they were doing for fun. And it just, I was just like, wow, that sounds great. I had a piece of that as well. So anyway, so yeah, it felt great. It felt like I won the lottery. And I wasn't like, I was willing to do whatever it takes to get through the program. That was just my mindset.
I'm pausing here at certain points to bring to your attention some of the principles that Scott is implementing in his life as he's moving through. You know, you have to, as he said, you have to push through. He got in, he felt the lottery, always get that high. Then the reality of what what we're in hits, and you have to make a decision. Am I going to give up in within this? Because it costs. There's a cost to it all. There's a cost, and there's a cost in life, period. A cost in doing nothing, and there's a cost in doing everything. I mean, there's a cost. And so you just have to decide which price you want, because the outcome for each cost is determined already, based on that decision that you will make. And so Scott said, now I'm gonna do the right thing in here. And he began, knew that there was a degree of sacrifice, if you will. That he made that declaration. I always tell people, Scott, life is a series of internal declaration. I believe that internal declaration, if you will, is coming from our belief system, coming from the subconscious man who is sitting there. I believe that when he starts making decisions, because you have the conscious man, he's making all kinds, he's listening to crazy stuff. 2 years, I'll look good on a diet, lose weight. 2 weeks later, he forgets everything. But that guy that makes this decision here, I believe that when he makes the decisions, Scott, he will implement the plans and want to make it come to fruition. Also, I believe that those angels, the unseen, is waiting for him to talk. I think when he talks, I honestly believe I'm becoming more and more convinced of this. When he speaks, because we are energy, that we're pulling the energies, which is embodied in other people, and other things, we're pulling it to us to help us to get to where he just said he was going to. I just believe that with all my heart, man. So here you are. You made your declaration. And again, life is a series of them coming from the inside. As you are now looking at your life, you've gained much, you've achieved much. And this man is there, but we are more than the body in gaining things and material stuff. I'm talking about Scott, man inside there. What was going on at Scott when you're getting into your home? You got your nice little place and you're quiet. And those little quiet glimpses, thoughts, the inner man begins to whisper to you. Or some of those glimpses that you were getting, Scott, as you're in your dream, as you got achieved with that? What were some of those things that were coming in there and disturbing your comfort, if you will?
Yeah, I think that there was always this, the little voice inside our head or in our body. It's there, it's real. And it was the one thing that was, I think I've always been, you know, coming into full contact with. You know, it was the voice that was full of self-doubts. It was the voice that you know, when I wanted to do something, I heard it, you know, I was like, I want to do this thing over here. This little voice would be like, are you sure you're going to do that? Because if you do, you know, you might fail and worth it. You really think, you know, and it would just, you know, carry on like that. It still does sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes up, I'm able to recognize it. And I'm like, ah, there you are again. Well,
yep.
You know, but yeah, back years ago when I just started to, you know, we all have this. I mean, it's just part of our human condition, I think. But it's really just that, you know, it's whether we're born with this thing or it's something that manifests over time as part of our, you know, like internal negativity. It's actually, I used to think that it was like this demon inside me. It was like this bad guy. And I had to crush this thing and beat it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. But lately, when I started to think about it, like when I look back on it and, you know, I try to, like, in other ways, I would try to bury this thing because I just didn't want it in my head anymore. We can call this negative thinking or
something
like that. But now I realize, like, that's actually the part of me that wants to grow. And it actually needs more love and comfort in order for it to stop talking that way. So I started to give it more of that, you know, love. I kind of like, now I think, well, back in the day, like, you know, years ago, wow, I wish I'd figured it out then. But that's part of the journey is figuring things out as you go. You know, we're not born with the answers. Maybe we are, but we have to still, you know, we have to become conscious of what they are and figure them out. But yeah, it was just when I was alone and, you know, just, I don't know, in my space, there was always, you know, a distraction, you know, so I always look for something to keep me occupied because first of all, I have a very busy mind. It's very creative, very destructive at the same time, you know, so I was always like on the move. And a part of it is that I also just actually spend a lot of time alone. I do really enjoy it, but there are times even now and I'm like, you know, I just want to go out and be amongst people. Too much time is not a great thing for me. I start to just, you know, like some of that dirty thinking comes back again. And I start to actually feels like I'm reliving who I was like long ago. And not that I, you know, the person I was long ago, I love that guy still. I don't want to be him again. But when I feel like I'm spending too much time alone, I think that's when I start to isolate and then I'll start to, you know, watch Netflix and do things like that. But I need to connect with people, even though I'm half introvert, half extrovert. I'm mostly introvert, but I, you know, I think we all do. I mean, we all need people, to be honest with you, no matter.
I know exactly what you're talking about, man. I know exactly what you're talking about, Scott.
So I love people. I do coaching all the time. I talk to people all the time. I, you know, and it's just, and because it's only through communicating with other people, talking to them and talking about your story and hearing their story and sharing ideas that you really, you learn a lot about yourself, but you learn a lot about the world as well. And that, oh, so I'm not alone after all. They think too, or, you know, she thinks that way too, or, or they don't, well, somebody doesn't agree with, and that's okay too. So, but anyway, getting off track a little bit, but yeah, I think having time alone is, now I really value it. And in the past, I probably valued it as well. It's just that it scared me a lot more, you know, just because I didn't know how to really handle it. So there was always like games or TV or something or drinking or whatever it may have been.
I used to try, and my conversation with myself was, I was to try to say to myself, Scott, I got to find a way how to kill this part of me. And I had to learn because I, to be honest, I hated it. I hated it because I saw it as this weakness of the, and it was the area by which every, you know, I was being traumatized, if you will. And I had to learn how not to want to kill him, because that was my language to this individual that was part of me. And I would sit down and say, I need to figure out a way how to kill you. And it took me years to learn how to love him. As you said, I had to learn how to give him some honor, give him some time and, you know, have that conversation where, and over the years, I could see that he changed in much ways because he was with me, you know, and we still have those moments, you know, and like you said, it's those beliefs that were part of us, they linger in the sense that they are there. But what happens is as we become more mature in our understanding of who we are, the mechanics of our thoughts and all those things, that when that feeling, mindset, those thoughts appear, they're equipped to recognize it and not allow it to stay for a while, so that thought will grow. So we're able to end that conversation, if you will, faster than before. But that takes time to get there. And as you get more familiar with you, you will be able to deal with that aspect. And so here you are, because I wanted to move into when you started, you became a trainer, if you will, going into a different culture, because that's important, because I know that has a tremendous part of forming you, because that culture is much older than our Western culture. And their systems of the mind is much more developed than we in the Western world in some cases. So how did you, was it, Scott, that brought you into that aspect to lead you in that direction? What was the circumstances that pulled you there? And how did you feel about being pulled there?
Yes, that is a great question. Yeah, now things might get interesting. So going back a little bit before I came here, so I was working as an engineer. I grew up in Halifax. I moved up to Vancouver after I was finished college because there weren't any jobs. I just said to my parents one day, I'm going out west to, I had one friend out there literally, and how I got to Japan will be coming soon, but I moved out there first when I was about 22, got on a plane, 22, 23, got on a plane, just went out there, only knew one person, had one suitcase and about $20 in my pocket. And I landed there and immediately like found a couple of really good jobs and as an engineer, and I stayed there for about 6 or 7 years. And I'll get into how I got here in a second, but I did go through a period where I was doing a lot of like heavy drinking. So part of the self-help and personal development came about because when I went into the program, they actually taught me how to, recover from that and become, I started to realize who I was. And one of the first books that I, when I started to come out of it, the fog, I think, probably when I was about 26, maybe 27, I'm about 54 now, right? So back then, I started coming to the fog. I started working with a life coach, I guess, at the time. Mm-hmm. He said, you've got to write down your goals and figure out what you want. And I was like, okay, I've never done that before, but I'm going to give it a shot. And one day I'm in the bookstore. I'm just walking through. And I came across a book by Tony Robbins called Awaken the Giant Within.
Yeah.
And I just started reading self-help books. I always read fiction. I'd never really worked on myself before. And I started reading these self-help books. And I just started devouring them. It was like you're so hungry, you haven't eaten in weeks, and suddenly you eat something. It was like, I was just getting filled up with this stuff, and I loved it, right? But I felt myself like growing. It was like wild. Anyway, got this book, went home, and in the book, I still have it up on my shelf. Tony said, you've got to write down your goals, and you've got to make a vision board. I thought, yeah, I'm going to do that, right? So I started doing it, and within weeks, I had this like bachelor apartment I was living in. It was nice little place and whatever. I just didn't have any furniture, but on my walls, I had it covered with all these like positivity quotes, and I had pictures of places I wanted to go. You know, again, we didn't have internet back then. So I went to the library, got a bunch of books. Yeah. I was bringing books home, and I was reading books on how to learn Thai and Vietnamese. And I didn't know, and I realized my goals were like three things. One is I've always wanted to be a writer. I've been writing since I was like in junior high school, right? Always wanted to be a writer, love books. And the third thing is, second thing is I wanted to go traveling around the world, never been anywhere before. And the third thing was I just wanted to get better. Like I just wanted to feel great about myself. And so it was like the three things I wrote down as my goals. Now the first thing on the writing came later, but the second thing I started working on that right away. Like I decided right there then, I made a decision that I never backed away from. I made a decision that I was going to get on a plane a year from that day, which would have been probably March of, I think I came here in March of 98. So back in March of 97, I made that decision. It's like, I'm going to go traveling around the world. I don't have any money. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but it's going to happen. And I remember Tony saying, don't figure out the how, just make a decision on how you're going to do this and what that I do. Right. So I'm like reading this book going, you know, and I've got my walls covered with all these like places that I want to go, like the, you know, Sydney Opera House and the Thailand and all these things. And every day, like I manifested that future before, like a year before it happened. Right. So now here's the thing is that I truly believe that when you make a decision on something, that suddenly things are going to start to line up for you. Like I can't explain how it works, but I just have this crazy ability to manifest something if I really want it badly enough. So I made a decision that I was going to go to Asia. I was going to go to Thailand and just hang out there for a while. Again, didn't know how I was going to get there. Obviously, like buy an airplane, but I didn't have the money for it. And I was like, okay, don't deal with the how, but we're going to do this thing. And I'm going to quit my job and everything, right? Well, 3 months later, you know, I'm like telling my friends about it. They're like, oh, you're crazy. You're not, you know, you know, you're staying here. You're going to keep going to the bars with us and hanging out. Like, nope, I'm leaving. Anyway, a few months later, I was living with a couple of roommates at the time. And, you know, one of my roommates read the newspaper all the time. I've never read a newspaper, right? One day I just happened to pick up one of the newspapers because I wanted to see what was playing at the movies, I think. And I just like opened it, just like literally just opened it like that. When I opened it, I looked down and there's an advertisement in the paper about this bit. And it says, teach English in Japan. We're recruiting. I'm like, yeah, that's a why not, right? And they said, send your resume here. So I put together a resume. I spent like a day typing out this nice little letter, sent it off. Didn't think twice about it. I was just like, why not? What have I got to lose, right?
Yeah.
I'm already going overseas anyway. Might as well go to Japan if I can. A month later, they contacted me. And they said, we want to have an interview with you. I'm like, okay, well, you know, right? So a month after that, I'm sitting in a hotel in downtown Vancouver with this Japanese businessman who owns these business schools in Japan, and having an interview. And after the interview, they go, okay, great. We'll contact you if we're interested. I'm like, okay. So, you know, I'm back home and the phone rang about a week later and they said, you know, really sorry you didn't get the job because they hired three people and hire three people every year. And they had like, you know, 50 applications or something, right? So, you know, it's like another one of the situations where it's like, I may not get this, but what have I got to lose, you know? And I just remember like that situation in college where it was like the same thing, right? So anyway, they called me up and said, sorry, you didn't get it. And I was like, okay, well, thank you anyway. But that didn't change my mind or change my plans. I was still going, you know, to Asia for whatever reason. Yeah. Anyway, the phone rang the next day and they said, you know, yeah, they said the third guy dropped out, you're in, so, right? Anyway. About 6 months later, I'm on a plane coming to Japan and they set me up with, you know, quit my job. Interesting though, I didn't actually quit my job. The company that I was working with a month before, so it's kind of interesting because I had planned to come to Japan. I had about a 6 month waiting period where, you know, because they decided that they had to decide the teach, you know, the teachers quickly. And they're like, you know, but you know, that was like back in October and I had to wait till March when they're going to fly us here. So I had like 5 or 6 months to put in, but I was still working and everything yet. I was going to quit my job and everything and just let my employer know a month beforehand. Probably 2 months before I was supposed to come to Japan, the company, something happened and the company actually ended up going bankrupt. There I was, like, if I had stayed, I would have been without a job. And but I had something lined up and anyway, I was on the plane. And again, I had never studied Japanese before. I couldn't use chopsticks. I don't even know if I'd had any. I think I might have eaten sushi the week prior to coming here, just something like supermarket. I think that's what they do over there, right? But that was it. I landed here, and it was just like game. It was like game time. It's like I got here, started learning a language. I started teaching English. I loved it. They set me up in a homestay, gave me a car. I'm making twice as much money as what I was making as an engineer, and working off as much. And I made another decision. I decided I'm not going back again. Right, but the thing is, there was a challenge to that is that my visa was a working holiday visa, which is only good for 1 year, which means that you get a working visa to stay in the country. And so anyway, had a great year. I wrapped it up, and then in order for me to stay, I had to find another job. And about a week before my visa expired, this older lady calls me one day, and she'd heard about me from somebody else, and she said, I heard you're looking for a job. Well, I have a school and I need to hire a new teacher for the year. And I'm like, wow, really? So we met. And the way it works is when you get a working visa, it's a big deal because you actually have to leave the country, get the paperwork done and everything. You have to be sponsored and, you know, all this stuff. And and she goes, you know, but it might be a little bit difficult getting your visa because they want you to have an educational degree. You have an engine. So she's like, but don't worry. She goes, my brother-in-law works in immigration. Okay. Right. We're down there. And sure enough, like, meet her brother-in-law. He's like, yeah, well, normally we wouldn't do this, but it looks okay. Stamp, stamp, stamp. I leave the country and go back to Canada for a few days, get my visa, come back. And now I've got my working visa. So which basically means like, once you have that, you know, you can, yeah, as long as you continue working, you can stay as long as you want. But anyway, point of it though is that I just had these moments where it was like this moment of impossibility where, you know, I wasn't really sure if I was going to, you know, was it going to happen? Was it not going to happen? I really didn't know. But all I knew is like, every time I made a decision, like, this is what I want, something happened a week later. Like, it just like, it was suddenly like the person that I needed to make it happen was right there.
You know? Yeah.
And yeah,
the I've angels, got to believe it.
It's like, yeah. That,
it's just, yeah. That's what I said earlier. I've come to believe this, that when we make that decision in here, I've seen it so many times, and you are attesting to it in your life, and I've seen this in mine. And he makes the decision. It's the most powerful thing because we make it, and not knowing, we look at the natural realm and how, as they say, you don't figure out how and all that stuff. You make that decision. I tell people, your life is circular because you haven't made that decision with your subconscious mind, that man, your soul. When he believes it and when he makes a decision, everything changed. We're pulling from that genetic realm. And like you said, people are energy just housing the body just like you. And so when energy makes a demand on energy, you would be amazed how people just pop up with the solutions that you had in your thought, didn't know how it was going to work out. The solution comes before you. Things working and falling into place you could have never done because it was totally all out of your capability. Yet, what did you do? You made that one decision. And I tell people, you've got to learn to allow that man to guide you. And you will get... It's difficult because we've been programmed to listen to this one and allow this one to run the life. And this one has all kinds of questions, and this one knows. He says, I am going to. And then you put up your board, your vision board. These are all tools that you use in personal development. What are you doing when you put up a vision board? I tell people you're unleashing one of the most powerful things that it has a human being is his imagination. That thing is absolutely powerful. When you engage it with your words, I'm going to do that, your world begins to change. Things begin to manifest because you have made a decision that this is what you need and it will manifest. I'm telling you, Scott, as I get older, I'm 62, I can tell you that's how it works all the time that I've seen my time on this planet. So here you are, all of this marvelous. And when those things begin to manifest, call them miracles. Mm-hmm. It's a miracle, man. Yeah, you called it in, man, you know? And so here you are with all these miracles happening with you. We're now in a space, a culture, as I said earlier, is thousands of years older than ours. Being there, even though you're teaching, how did that culture, Scott, begin to infect you, your belief? How did all of that stuff begin to get in there? Because you can't be around that type of power. When you travel and you go into certain cultures, you could feel it. And especially when you walk into certain buildings, temples, places like that, you could feel that ancient power sitting there. And you're able now to dance within there. How did it start to affect you, Scott?
Yeah, I think that, so one of the things I love to do from the very, like when I first got here was the temples. I love going to the temples. It just seems to be like a real spiritual power there. So on my days off, I would go driving to all these temples around town. I went to Kyoto for I was here for a few months, and actually going there next week. And yeah. Just Kyoto, I think being surrounded by, first of all, it's such an old culture that there was so many. Well, I didn't know anything actually. Like I said, I went from one culture to another one that's, you couldn't get another culture that's so completely different, right?
Yeah.
So every day it was like I was learning something new. Some of those things that I was learning were, I was learning them the hard way, because I would make mistakes, cultural mistakes. And, you know, thing is, you know, people here are so nice. They'd be like, well, you know, it's not quite how we do it. You should try it this way next time. I didn't really think about it. Same thing two or three times until I realized, oh, okay, that's how we do it here. Okay, so, but I was very, always very adaptable to other cultures, though. I had other friends that I met here, you know, and they were from different parts of the world. And, you know, they were here for a little while, and they seemed to be a lot of them seemed to be really negative. And they're like, you know, we hate this place. We can't wait to leave. And I was like, I love this place. I can't wait to stay longer. Because I just, I did love the people. The culture was something where I didn't have any issues, not any issues, but I didn't have as many issues as a lot of other people. I wanted to learn the language. I was even writing the kanji. I still do, practice writing the Chinese characters or the Japanese characters. I just got really into it. And I think I was lucky as well, where I made a lot of friends right away that were Japanese, and they were teaching language. They were taking me out to places. My, and when I start to look around it, I realized one day, wow, I actually created all of this. Because when I look back at, you know, how I made that decision to come here and do this and that, it's all this is happening because one day I decided to get on a plane, right?
Yeah.
And now it's I'm going to these ancient temples and these places that, I once only read about in books. And now I'm actually here doing the thing, right? So I just loved living in a new culture where, again, every day was a new day, something new to learn. I've been here 26 years now. You do get used to it after a while, but I still feel that way. You know, there's still a lot to learn. And,
yeah.
I still like to go back to Canada occasionally, but one thing that just has kept me grounded here is that I always had, I was making a lot of friendships and relationships, and I just didn't have a reason to walk away from it. I had a lot of it was work and people wanted me to do things for them. And I was like, wow, mm-hmm. I could just feel a very strong sense that this is where I belong. So it just
grounded. And you started moving into the space that we call personal development, because you cannot be in that place without the mindset, because it's more about that mindset than when you sit in the temple. Because I've done that here in Thailand and gone to some of the temples. I've actually spent time meditating and chanting with the monks that are in there, and they'll tell you it's a totally different energy that anyone can ever experience in your life. I mean, you need to find those little secluded places and temples where those men are serious about their meditation and that stuff. It'll change you. I mean, just standing on the ground itself, you will feel it just coming in. And I've seen people change. They know it changed me. I know you cannot be there and not started where some real deep stuff started to manifest. And I want to come back to, because I know you will have to deal with this young man that believed a certain thing back then, that he wasn't capable of all these different things and so forth. He began to unearth all of those beliefs that you had in that culture that focuses and calls one to the mindset of one. Even in the corporate world, everything is about this mindset. How did all of that started to unpack you?
Yeah, so I love the conversation about mindset, because I truly believe that if you have the right mindset, you're unstoppable. I mean, there's nothing you can blend yourself into any culture. You can learn anything that you want to learn. So I started to do a lot of meditation, right? Which I hadn't really, I think for me, meditation was always just using my imagination to create something. Right?
Yeah.
But when she started to sit down with myself and be quiet about it, and actually, I met some Buddhist monks, like when I first came here, and they took me to these temples, and they actually introduced me to meditation. One of the oldest meditation temples is actually 5 kilometers from where I am right now, and I go there like a couple times a month. It's just very, really powerful experience. But just getting back to the mindset is that whether if I was working in my corporation, or I was working on a book, or if I was just doing like whether it was it could be just a hobby, right? I always had the mindset that I'm going to do this thing the best that I can do it. I'm going to do it better than anybody else because I can outwork anybody. And I just always had that mindset where I can't fail at this, because the only way for me, like the only way to fail at something is to give up, like, or not at all. Like those are the, that's the only way you can fail, right? So my mindset going into like every job I've ever had, maybe I wasn't the best employee they always had, but I certainly stayed the longest because I showed up every day to do the work. When it came to dealing with, our customers were Japanese, so of course I had to learn a lot of the etiquette and just having conversations with like thousands and thousands of people over the years through my teaching, through working in corporations, I think it really solidified, it built a foundation for me to be able to stay here, but also to assimilate myself into the culture. Now that's not something that everybody wants, but it was something that I want. I could just feel it in me. That's like, this culture can be, like I said, foreign culture can be outside of our own, can be difficult to, assimilate yourself into. But I really wanted to, because I really, I love the history. The people were great. I've always been treated very well. And I just wanted more of that, right? But I knew, if I had to change my mindset, and I think it just, I don't know if it's something that changed naturally. I don't really know if that's true. I mean, you do have to work at it, right?
Yeah.
And yes, I've written about it a lot. I've researched a lot about the mindset, but it's something that it's like a muscle. You can't just get to a certain point where you're like, okay, well, I've had enough of working on that and I'm going to not do that anymore. I'm always working on, because there's always mindset blocks, things that are going to step in to block you from moving forward. And as soon as you recognize what that block is, you chip away at it, remove it, and then you can move on to the next step. Anyway, I'm just getting back to that, though. I think my approach to things is like, I want to keep moving forward with, personal growth, but also as my character, I want to expand. I want to be bigger than I want to be something greater than I ever believed I could be. And that was just like, I just felt like the only way for me to do that is to ground myself into this culture. I worked that hard to get here, and I just couldn't see myself going back to the way things were. Like that just wasn't enough. And again, I had a lot of friends when I first moved here, and everybody went back. I mean, that's just natural. They went back to their families or back to their school and back to their continuing whatever. But I just wanted to keep moving forward, because part of my fascination with this is to see how far I could go. And I'm still that way. I want to know how far I can go before, like you said, before the show is over.
I think we are so deep, Scott, that it'll take us several go around. I honestly believe that we are that deep. And again, the only thing that in this realm, in this plane, this dimension, that we have access to it to be stay so that we could manage and live here is the body, the natural format, which is the material from that is a part of this dust that is here. So it just holds us, it just contains us here so that we can experience here. And then when we change the container, I think we are moving into another form that is still about knowledge, because whenever you get there, you're not going to know 100% of stuff. You're going to go look around and go, okay, need to get busy and start learning some of the principles on this side and see what goes on over here, when you get down to the quantum physics of things, there's different principles that sits beyond there that you have to become aware of. And that's a deeper knowledge here. Imagine when we get to that other place. So guys, this conversation for me, I've been like really focused listening to Scott, because I know and I'm picking up all the principles that he's talking about, and a man that has been able to amass so much time studying about human behavior. And we interpret that, or we give the language of human behavior with self-help and personal development, but it's all about human behavior. And you have someone that has amassed all of that and put it in formats in these books. Guys, he has several books, and I'm going to put all his stuff together so you have access to Scott. You've got to get into his space, man, because you cannot be lingering amongst all of that information and it doesn't do anything to you. And so he's put some of that, as he digests it, he regurgitated into a different format that you are much easier to understand and for you to bring in. And I tell people, create the space when you are going to read the book. Scott talked about the impact of a book in his life. I have the same in my life. But you have to create the space. You can't be rushing. You're never going to get anything. Get your coffee, get your tea, get your milk, whatever you do. Sit down and chill. The words have the ability to jumping out off of those pages and lodging inside your belief system and unearth all of that crazy stuff that you've been programmed with and change your life for you to get up and say stuff like, you know what, I'm going to put out a vision board and I'm going to move and get out of my job. I'm going to go to travel the world. And here he is. He did exactly that. And I want to talk to Scott about something now, because I know I mentioned to you briefly about he has amassed many hours studying human behavior that we call personal development and so forth. And from that, he has developed and he's pulled in a couple of things that he saw that is very important that he calls pillars, these foundations, if you will, which you are now going to be able to stand up and begin to shift your perspective in things. Don, I want you to talk about that. I know, as I mentioned, the books kept coming because of all the changes that you were growing. You were literally growing and expanding from that knowledge and your location. And I'm going to get to Japan, Scott, because that culture fascinates me, because here's a culture that chases perfection. Everything has to be perfect. I want to see the mindset of that, because that is very interesting to me, because perfection doesn't exist. I don't know, but yet they chase it. And so I'm very curious about that, and I'm heading in that area in a few months. I want you, Scott, to introduce us, if you will, to the five pillars that you have amassed and you've seen that is the necessary foundation by which these human beings, which I'm a part of and you are, able to hold on to them and guide them out of their situation, if you can go into that.
Sure, yeah. There's probably more than five, but I can list five. Anyway, I think I've got a, I've got quite a list of them, but just to boil it down, so, and we've already talked about a few of these already, but first of all, making a decision is, again, one of the pillars, because not just making any decision, but making a definitive decision where you're so sure that you're going to do this thing that nothing is going to disrupt your decision. And that's just one thing that I always did, is when I made that decision, I just went all in on it, no matter what the situation was, whether I, and again, it's not about figuring out the how you're going to do it. That's when I used to get bogged down into, okay, well, I really want this thing, but how am I going to do this? I don't have, you know, and then you start to think about all the things you don't have that's going to lead you to not having that thing you want, right? So how you're going to get it's not important. And like we were discussing, you know, when I made a decision, it's like suddenly the how was there.
Yeah. Right?
So like I just, and I did the same thing when I started publishing about 10 or 11 years ago. It's like, I decided like, I want to be, you know, it's you know, like I put this off long enough. I want to be an author now. And I just made a decision like, that's it. I'm writing that book. And I just went all in and did it. I didn't know how I was going to get it out there. We didn't have self-publishing at the time, so like chasing publishers and stuff like that. But again, the first thing is just deciding, what it is that you want. Now, you may not be at the stage where you know what you want. So if that's the case, then you just need to take some time to really think about it. And this is probably the other pillar that this may actually be the first one. They might jump around a bit. You can move the order around, you know, not in order per se, but the other one is visualization. Like I said, I'm really crazy about visualizing what I want, because when you visualize what you want, then you can make that decision about what it is. You just need to know what your next step's going to be. That's it, right? Because all you need to do to move forward is build momentum. And that leads into take immediate action, which is another one of the pillars, which I think one of my book series is built off. Bulletproof Mindset Mastery is like, that's part of the that series, is like just taking immediate action. And Tony Robbins talks about this, but so I'm not just, you know, taking what he said. I actually put that into practice, where when I took action on something, there was always an immediate after, like something happened after that. You know, it may not have been what I was expecting, but when I did this thing that I was scared to do, you know, like whatever the result of that was, like somebody showed up to deliver on that promise, whatever it is, it only happened because I actually did something in the first place. So you've got to take action. Even if you're, you know, you may be feeling that uncertainty, you know, you may be thinking it's not going to work out. Well, there's no, like I said, there's no guarantees. You know, the only guarantee in life is that we're going to run out of time, right? So by the time you get to the end of your life, you don't want to get to the end of it and have that regret. My only regret is that I'm going to get through my life and look back and go, I wish I'd done that thing that I didn't do. It's not the failures that I've had along the way. It's failure, and I'm taking this from one of my mentors, Tom Bilyeu, is just data-rich information. You're going to fail at things. You're going to get the feedback from that and go, all right, well, that was a good experience. And then you're just going to move forward. So one of those other pillars, by the way, is, you know, dealing with that failure, where I think one of my books on Fail Big, I talk about this a lot. You know, it's like failure is actually, it's a great thing. It's just that going back to, you know, from way back when we were just like little babies growing up and we get into the education system, of course, we get punished for, you know, not passing our tests, you know, and all those other things. And then, you know, mom and dad yells at us for doing this and that, right? But I mean, so we develop that mindset that failure is a bad thing and I better not do it because I'll end up, you know, losing my job, people will hate me and all these things. But it actually is a good thing within context. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. You know, if you're failing forward towards something that you really feel like you got to have it, then you just got to keep going. You know? Now, I didn't create 10,000 light bulbs or do anything like that, but I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, I tried and I didn't make it. I mean, I could take like book publishing as one of those things. Not every book was a big success, but that depends on how you frame success as well, right?
Yeah.
You know, and everybody has their own. It's not just like getting a pile of money and becoming rich and famous. You know, if that happens, great. But for me, it's all about building character. Like, because the thing is, if you can build your character, you're going to be able to do things that you just never imagined possible. Like that's,
oh, yes.
And we're never done building our character, by the way. But for me, like something I've been working on recently is clearly defining my values. And although we may know internally what our values are, you can say, well, you know, I'm honest and I have integrity and these things. Well, we really want to write these things down. Like you want to, I spend a lot of time journaling, making notes everywhere, writing things down, because I want to get clarity. So clarity is actually one of the, like, again, there's probably more than five pillars. Clarity is one of the keys, because when you're clear on your goals, when you're clear on the action you need to take, when you're clear on the decision you just made, then clarity is the key. Every time I feel lost or confused or I don't know what to do next, and it's usually because of a lack of clarity. Recently, I've been working with my own life coach, and he was very clear to point that out to me, where he would just ask me again and again, what is your thing? What is your goal? And I thought I was very clear on that, you know, like, well, and I start talking about other things and kind of moving the conversation away. Just be very clear on what it is that you want. Even if you're not clear right now, take some time to think about it. Sit down with yourself for 10 minutes. 10 minutes of 10 or 15 minutes or 30 minutes of just being alone with yourself. And I don't mean, you know, like I will like turn my phone off and put it in another room. And that's...
I do the same thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was talking to someone once who's really disciplined. I said, how do you get so disciplined? He was... Well, it's easy, Hugo, is I just I unplug the TV, I move it out of my room, and I turn my phone off and I put that in another room. And I think he wasn't exaggerating. He was just sharing with me, you know, like his level of discipline is just good because he managed to just get rid of all the distractions. You know, just do whatever it takes to get to where you want to go. I think like just having that mindset is like whatever it takes. And I find like, because I've coached, you know, thousands of people over the years, I think just through book coaching and I've done like a lot of life coaching as well. But the one thing that people always struggle with is like they thought they had to have all the answers before they move forward. It's like,
yes.
You just need to move forward with something. You don't need to know step three. It's like, what's step one? What's step two? And I really need to break things down. I break things down into like very small steps, which is one thing I talked about. And I think do the hard things first, because I've always resisted doing the hard things. I want to do the easy things and have my cake first. But that usually resulted in, you know, not moving forward with my goals. When I switch things around, I had to break it down into very small steps. So every day I've got my hard thing I start off with in the morning. I do deep breathing. I do, you know, 15 to 30 minutes of meditation. And I like to wake up early so I can get in that good hour. And that just sets in. And by the way, talk to yourself in the mirror. Mm-hmm. And yourself, you love yourself. You're doing great. You're going to have a great day. You've got to pump yourself up in the morning, because as soon as you wake up, those, you know, like a lot of those kind of like negative thoughts are like going to be there waiting for you. So you've got to be ready to head on. You know, like
your day is set in the first 5 minutes when you wake up, the first 2 minutes. And because if you allow that, and I tell people thoughts are like seed. If you plant it, it'll grow and you'll be amazed. Another thing that I've learned, Scott, is that every human being is a meditator. I don't understand how people say they don't meditate, and I beg to differ. We're working, we're meditating. Maybe meditating on your argument that you had with your wife, but you're working. Maybe meditating about the your bill, your lack of, your whatever, your sickness, your disease, whatever it is. This human nature thing is designed to meditate. That's why we lock ourselves into our beliefs, because we've been meditating on it for X amount of years, because everyone telling you you're this, you're that. And then you start to meditate it and you believed it. Now, when you're becoming a designer, like what Scott is talking about, you're learning it to quiet the thoughts, because it's coming and it'll come all the time because you're alive. And now you have the choice of choosing which ones you want to manifest, because all thoughts manifest into something. Let's go to the moon. Then they began to take the steps necessary, the calculations, to design the things to bring it to pass. That came as a thought. That thought was manifested. So everything that you see around you in this planet came from the world of the mind, the thought field. And then someone did the work that is necessary to make it a manifest physical things. That's what we're talking about in the realm of the spiritual. You're doing the same thing. You're doing it from out of thin air, as they say. The material is not seen to you. Most of us are waiting to have the material before we start the project. The project is not started until you decide we're going to make the moon. You got to make a decision first. When you make the decision, we'll see all the things start coming into being to make it up and make it happen. That's what Scott is talking about. You have to make that decision. And I've said it to you guys, my listeners, all the time. The reason why your life is circular is because you haven't decided yet what you want. Thinking about it, and you've been thinking about it for the last 20, 30 years, you know, but you haven't decided. And you make that decision, things change. Another thing, that principle that Scott mentioned, writing down the vision. I grew up in a church, and there's a verse when Scott said it came rushing into my mind. It's write down the vision and make it plain. you got to strip away all the stuff and get to the core, the root of what you want. Make it plain, because when it, and the other aspect, the other part of that is that so that whoever looks at it, they will pick up that vision and accomplish what you said. That's what it says right there, guys. I'm not messing with you. Go check it. I think it's Micah, but it's in there. And that's what Scott is talking about, one of those principles. And these are principles. I've read the Vedas. I've read the I Ching, the Bible. These are all those, the Vedas and the I Ching and all these books were much older than the Bible, but yet all of those principles are sitting in all of them. So we have an individual, guys, that is Scott Allen, and he has information for you. And I want you guys to get into his space. We're going to provide everything for you to get access to him. And I'm going to bring Scott back because I wanted this interview to be a part where you get to know him. Second interview that I want to do with Scott is dance from the beginning, from the time we say hello to the time we end, into all those principles and mindsets. And I want to get into the nitty gritty so you guys could get access to see the deepness and the richness of all of the hours of study that is he. And so we're going to bring him back for that. Scott, man, I've been paying attention. I've been so focused on your words from the time we began because I just wanted to be expanded, and you have done that for me. And I want to thank you so much for coming to Threads of Enlightenment.
No, it's been amazing. Yeah. Amazing conversation. Loved it. So thank you for everything you do. And thanks for having me on the show. I think we just barely scratched the surface. We have a lot more to talk about in the future.
Definitely, man.